Welcome back to another episode of Awareness Action Enneagram Podcast. My name is Creek, and I'm with my collagenous co-hosts, Mari Sikora and Maria Jose Munita. Collagenous meaning misty, dim, obscure, and dark, mostly because my eye is swelling shut.
I was going to say, I haven't heard a word you're saying, because all I'm sitting here doing is saying, what is going on with your face, man? What's happening here, Creek?
So here's story time, real quick. So Sunday, went on a hike.
I mean, it's hard to look at. I got to say,
Creek, I can turn my camera off.
Creek's a handsome guy, you know, but let's like the, you know, it's like, I don't know, some
how the mighty
freak
have fallen.
Showed up. Yeah,
come on.
Which is, you know, which works well for this four episode, you know.
That's
this
right.
This is what I feel like I look like, you know.
Yeah, so you wanted to make like almost like an entrance.
Yeah, exactly.
Kind of really memorable.
Yeah, get some pity ahead of time.
Came
to the wrong group, but
Well, I'm recording Fathoms later today, so I'll get some pity there. I went on a hike on Sunday, and then huge thunderstorm was coming in, so I jogged back to the car, got in the car, started driving, insane winds. I had to like drive like Jason Bourne, like weaving around all these branches blowing everywhere. I had to get out, drag a tree across the road to be able to keep going.
Jeez.
Then got redirected onto a dirt road, almost like skidded off.
Wow.
Anyways, I made it back to my parents' house, and there was a tree down, and the neighbors couldn't get into their house. So me and my dad, you know, cut it up and helped move it. And it had poison ivy on it. I saw it. And it's like, I'll just wash it off afterwards. That normally works. It really does. Uh-huh. And I did not wash enough, apparently. Mm. And it's been a brutal, 6 days.
Wow. Well, I'm sorry to hear that, and even sorrier that we have to look at it through the podcast. But,
So let's move on.
Yeah,
let's move on to
speaking of
suffering
force,
and pain and what not to look at.
Yeah,
you've mentioned that you don't coach a lot of fours. Is that correct?
Yeah. Well, you know, when we talked about the twos, I think both kind of admitted that, you know, just by the nature of the kind of work we do, you're not going to get equal distributions of all the types, right? And each population has, different, distributions of the Enneagram types. And the areas that we tend to work in, you just don't see as many fours, right? I mean, I've worked with fours over the years as coaching clients, and certainly know a lot of fours and have had a lot of fours in workshops and that sort of thing. But as far as direct executive coaching experience with fours, it's probably the type I have the least experience with. I'm not either twos or fours, you know, for me. So, you know, I want to caveat that. And, there may be people out there who work with higher populations of fours who, you know, would have more to contribute to this. But, we can share what has worked for us.
My experience is the same. Yeah. So I will not repeat the same things you said. Yeah. It's basically the same.
Why do you think that is?
People tend to migrate to areas that fit their temperament, right? And, by all means, this is not to say that fours can't be leaders, that fours can't be executives, that fours can't be great managers. Just by the nature of their temperament, they are going to want to do things differently, right? And doing things differently is rarely a path to the top in the corporate world, right? Now, there are, some great business people. I am, fully convinced that Steve Jobs was a transmitting four, right? I've heard, people have argued that with me, some because there's no way a four could be a leader or something. First of all, I don't really see Steve Jobs as much of a leader, quite frankly.
Visionary.
He was a visionary. He was an entrepreneur, and he was a sales guy.
Yeah.
Right. But that's just not my experience. I have worked with fours at the executive level. It's just not going to be where they're going to migrate to. And even when you look at Jobs, back in the day, the whole theme of Apple was think different, right? I mean, you know, what's more for than that, right? And, you know, if you read the biography, the Walter Isaacson biography of Steve Jobs, which is an excellent book and really well done, it just screams transmitting four. I mean, it could have, you know, it's almost like an Enneagram person wrote it. So they can be leaders, but, you know, just like you're not going to find, you know, many, you know, type eight, you know, grade school teachers, for example, right? You know, it's probably not going to be where they're going to migrate to. So, plus in the same way, yeah, you know, plus in the same way that, you know, the great Mo Sislak said about old people, you know, old people are no good at everything, you know, and so fours are kind of, you know, yeah, Mo Sislak was the bartender from The Simpsons. So anyway, no, look, so we can talk about coaching fours, right, and what kind of things they tend to run into and so forth. So, you know, we can certainly talk about this. You know, it's not like we don't have anything to say. So,
all right. So, what have you run into when working with fours, especially, you know, on podcasts and stuff like that?
On podcasts? Yeah.
Just, are they mostly awesome and the best thing that ever happened to you? Or?
No.
Look, go ahead, Maria. I'll let you answer that.
No, I wasn't going to answer that. You know, it's great, Creek. No, I was going to share how one of the things that I believe fours benefit from understanding, it's the blind spot, self-absorption. And it's this dynamic or these pattern they have where they see themselves as unique in comparison to other people. So that pattern makes them think that most things are personal. And that triggers reactions in them that are not always effective. So I think that understanding that, creating some distance between what happens outside and themselves or them, I think that helps them be more effective in life in general. And that applies to all sorts of areas. They tend to take things too personal, therefore react in a way that it's just not adaptive.
And I think they take things too personal because everything they do is personal and is a representation of themselves, their significance, their mark on the world.
Yeah, so that's kind of what they produce. Everything that comes out of them, it's, as you say, a reflection of them. But what other people do, it's not necessarily that, like an extension of their identity, but mm-hmm. they might take it personal as well.
Yeah.
They might think that it's because they did this, they didn't do that, because they're good at this or not good at that. And that creates unnecessary kind of noise in the exchange. And it doesn't benefit them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, Maria Jose used the term self-absorption as, you know, the blind spot. And it's important to, that can sound, I think all the blind spots can sound a little bit judgmental, right? But that can sound, you know, more, I don't know, at least on my ear and in my mind, that's one of the ones that I think, ooh, boy, you know, even though I'm a massively self-absorbed person, but still, it's funny. I used to work with
that abusive.
You know, neck and neck, right? Tomato, tomato. It's funny. I honestly, years and years and years ago, it was the last job I had. I sat in an office. I sat next to a four, right? She was in the next office. And we used to have, you know, this was before I was really, you know, thinking much about the Enneagram. And we used to have debates over which one of us was more self-absorbed, you know. And,
you know, so. You won?
I would say, no, I'm more self-absorbed. And she'd say, no, I'm more self-absorbed. You know, it's not like you're more self-absorbed than me. No, it was like, we're both like, no, I'm more self-absorbed than you are. So it's not a negative mark on the character that were saying this. It's this tendency to filter everything through the lens of themselves, right? It's, you know, something happens and they have to kind of process it through themselves and say, okay, what's my reaction to this? Right. Kind of instead of just reacting to it, you know, or, you know, what does this say about me? You know, or so it's almost like they have to take this pause. Right. And this is the thing I have encountered that can be so frustrating to the people that they work with, is that they kind of have to wait for the four to process. Right. Rather
process
than just
what?
Whatever it is. Mm-hmm. Right. What does this have to do with me? And it's not just what does this have to do with me, but what is the meaning of this and the implication of this through the lens of me?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And, you know, and even though, you know, there are a lot of fours that, you know, can be very productive people, again, point to Steve Jobs, right? And, you know, I have friends and, you know, colleagues who are, you know, present company excluded, who can be really, you know, high output people, right? just kidding there, Craig. They can get a lot of stuff done, right? But
yeah.
It's, you know, again, there's always this dynamic of, you kind of have to wait until they sort through it all, mm-hmm. at an emotional level, not kind of an intellectual level like the five does, right? But at an emotional level before they're ready to move on. And that can be frustrating to people, because other people, you know, the threes and the eights and the sevens are like, you know, what's going on? What? Let's just go, mm-hmm. right? So,
and at least with my experience, right? Once I do sort through things,
yeah.
and I have aligned myself, like I'm a bullet, like I just,
yes.
you, I
yes.
will not stop.
Yes.
And
it's, absolutely.
So it's a slow going at first, but
yeah, absolutely. And that's absolutely right. And that's my experience, is that, you know, they're, you know, again, it's not that they're not going to do something, or they're hesitant, or they're incapable, or anything like that. It's just they can be a little slow out of the blocks, right? Mm-hmm. And also, the emotional part gets to it. And again, we talked about this to some extent with the twos, but it's different as well, right? Because the emotional tones and states are different than they are with a two. But again, the emotionality can be challenging for people who are less emotional in you know, the business world.
So can we talk, just define self-absorption a little bit more, comparing it to just what everyone does, which is in some ways, how is this in service of me and my goals? How does this make me look? Just we're all filtering everything through our lens. So what's the difference with what the four does?
Yeah, it's just a heightened and extended filtering, right, that happens. No, it's
heightened and extended and sluggish and torturous.
It's like, oh my God, are we still doing this, you know? It's
like, oh, you know. Yeah, yep, we are. We're still doing it,
you know. So it's, you know, for other people, it's, yeah. I mean, I filter things quickly through the lens of my own self-interest. And I don't even think it's self-interest in the case of the four, right? Look, for me, I filter everything through the lens of self-interest, okay? I fully admit that. And, you know, and I always look for ways to, you know, have mutual, you know, share interests, right? I call it, you know, mutual manipulation and exploitation. So,
this is not self-interest. It's identity.
Yes, I think self-expression.
It's like whatever I take in must say something about me. So what is this saying about me?
Yes.
And I need to define that, because if I want to feel unique, I mean, it starts from like, who am I? Mm-hmm. So it's all about identity and how things have to do with me.
Yeah.
therefore I need to align myself with this or not, but I need to define if this is me or not, or how it impacts me. And sometimes it has nothing to do with me.
So I'll give an example, right? So, years ago I had a client who was a preserving for, great guy, excellent manager of people, you know, very smart and capable, you know, really, you know, a talented, you know, mid-level executive. And I go in for a meeting with him, and he's got this big box on his desk, and he's kind of opening it up as I come in. And he's, you know, going through the box, and he's very excited, and he pulls out this lamp, right? And it's, you know, a very beautiful lamp, and I forget really what it looked like or anything. This was a long, long time ago. But for him, it was so important to bring this lamp into his office to create a space that was different from everybody else's office there, right? That lent a sense of elegance to the space, right? That just, you know, it was an object of beauty. You know, all these things that are so important to force, right? Particularly the preserving for. And for him, you know, we spent, you know, the hour meeting, probably half an hour talking about the lamp, right? And he told me how he had spent hours looking for and picking out exactly the right lamp and, you know, and all of these things. And, you know, and I just remember thinking, I don't know, you know, there are very few people who would do that, right? Who would spend that much time for that reason. And so when you look at that, it wasn't just the lamp, right? And it wasn't even, does this lamp look cool or not, right? Yeah, you know, me, I don't care. You know, give me a lamp, it's fine, right? Other people are going to say, no, you know, I want to think about this lamp. They might spend 5 minutes on it or 10 minutes on it, but not hours, right? And that was a distinctly Forish thing.
Yeah. So. I'll do that in forms for sure. Well, and in some ways, there's an unstable sense of self. And the only way that as I've grown up, I've known how to maintain a sense of self is by curating what I look like and how I'm expressing myself. So everything has to be thought through because it's becoming part of my identity. And am I curating my life and my decisions, where I live, what I wear, you know, all these things that I do, such that it's turning out into something beautiful.
And look, if today were my only data point, I would really think you know, that was time misspent. But
I had a good story, a really unique story. I tried to do a good deed, and it came back to bite me. And it's just that's how life works for us. Yeah. And I was hanging out with transmitting for yesterday, and he's what, like, he's 10 years older than me. We were talking about, as we've gotten older, realizing that not everything has to be 100% of our effort, and that in his job, he's like, I almost can't help doing that, but now I'm realizing I'm staring down the barrel of burnout because I'm trying to move a company in a direction that is on cutting edge, and it's just, I can't do that. So he's like, I'm just going to go 40, and my 40 is going to be 200% more than what they're expecting. Mm-hmm. And in learning to back off, that not everything has to be a perfect ultimate representation of my skills and my vision and my creativity.
Yeah.
And that I can back off and not care, become less emotionally invested. Not to do a less, like, a bad job, but, like, what is appropriate? What's the appropriate investment here, emotionally and otherwise?
Yeah. Yeah. And even just thinking through all of that, right, you know, is not what other people would spend their time on, right? Look, that's what the Enneagram tells us, right? Is that, you know, you won't spend the time thinking about the crazy things I spend my time thinking about. So, and I think because, you know, again, if we go back from a coaching perspective, and again, an organizational coaching perspective, and we can expand out from that to, you know, coaching in general in a moment, but that just doesn't fit as much, you know, because it's not what other people are thinking about in an organization. And so it becomes, which makes them feel even more of an outlier, right? Mm-hmm. Because they know that what I'm worried about is different.
Really? Yeah. And I think that I think speaks to the, leadership style of the four, that it's divisionary, and how they can have these really great vision, but they get frustrated or disappointed when people do not follow them wholeheartedly or don't agree with them completely. And they feel, because again, it's their vision, it's an extension of themselves. Yeah. And if they don't follow, they don't agree with my vision, then they're not approving of me. Yeah. So that's why I think that for fours in coaching, one of the key things is this. It's these, what we have as the accelerator, it's this identification. It's not seeing everything as having to do with me, and kind of creating that space that allows me to react in a more adaptive way.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is not to say that nothing is.
Of course.
I know. But I just want to make sure that people understand what we're suggesting, right? Some things are about you, right? And some things are a reflection of you, but not as much as you might think sometimes, right?
Yeah. And I think in some ways, there's some of the most useful feedback I've received from people I trust is in some ways like just what you said. People don't think like that. Like you're obsessing about things that people are not thinking about, which is an advantage sometimes because we can bring the fresh new approach.
Yeah.
But sometimes it's like you're worried about like this 2% thing that no one cares about. And are you doing this for you? And sure, you can do it for you, but just realize that you're doing it for you and it's not necessarily serving anyone else.
Yeah.
And is it worth your time and effort?
Yeah. And I think that, you know, to use one of the other accelerators, Maria Jose, is around objectivity, right? And, you know, fours, the fours who do really well is the one, you know, are the ones who are able to continue to grow in their ability to recognize what really matters and what doesn't, right? Mm-hmm. What's of significance and what is not. You know, again, I'll go back to the Steve Jobs story. You know, I mean, when he got fired from Apple the first time and went off to, you know, create a new computer, it had to be a perfect cube, right? The famous story that, you know, and the engineers kept telling him, Steve, it's not going to work. You know, it just can't work. And he said, no, it has to work. It has to work. Make it work.
It's like my squared guidebook.
Yeah, like the square guide. Yeah. We'll come back to that story in a moment. But
it was beautiful.
It was beautiful and cost $1 billion to print because of the odd size, you know? And so, so the computer ended up being a failure. And because he was so obsessed on this aesthetic ideal he had in mind, right? That he was focused on something that really didn't matter versus things that really did. And it was an important lesson that he learned and went on. And you know, and again, the fours who thrive learn to distinguish between what they should take seriously and what they shouldn't, what they should take personally and what they shouldn't. And it's not to say, oh, stop taking everything so personally, right? I mean, that's not good advice for a four. Mm. Or it's, hey, don't take things so personally, because some things are personal. Right. And, you know, and all of us have to realize that, you know, nothing in life is binary. you know? And so we have to say, okay, well, this really matters and here's why. But you know what? This part doesn't, okay? And that's where objectivity comes into place. It's this ability to step back and see things as they are, you know, undistorted by our emotional states and reactions. So, you know, that's another important quality. You know, a really common piece of advice that I give to fours is also stop being just like every other four, right? You know, because fours can fall into this trap of thinking that, you know, oh, I'm, you know, rebelling and I'm, you know, expressing myself and all this. And, you know, and they end up just kind of looking like everybody else, right? It's like the, you know, the Williamsburg, Brooklyn hipster phenomenon, you know? Mm-hmm. There was actually a case where a guy sued a company for using a photo of him in their advertising without his permission. And eventually it turned out that it wasn't actually him, you know, but he was just like the prototype hipster. And, you know, there were like, there's like a million of you guys, you know, and this one just happens to be another one. Right. So, you know, so
how do you feel, Craig, when you hear that? Stop being like any other four.
Yeah. I'll be like, I've always had I get it. It doesn't hit me super hard as I feel like it should. Mm-hmm. So I don't, maybe that's just me, but there's always something where I'm like, well, first of all, I don't know a ton of fours. So I don't know. There's something that I feel like could be tweaked in that statement, because it doesn't really hit me that hard.
And so it's when sometimes it can be the visible expression, okay? Other times it's the pattern of what feels like deep processing of, you know, the woe is me and, you know, all this other sort of stuff. And it's like that they can fall into the trap of thinking is unique to them.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Like I, you know, it's funny. There are certain books in life that you should read as a young person. Okay. Because when you read them, when you're older, you're like, yeah, I've outgrown this. Like, you know, Kerouac's On the Road or, you know, Patti Smith's books, you know, who I love Patti Smith and her music, but I read her and I'm like, oh man, are you still 21? You know, I mean, you know, really, are we still, you know, dealing with this? You know, Lawrence Durrell's Alexandria Quartet, you know, I just can't get through it because it just feels like a four script, right? And so, you know, again, it's like, okay, am I processing these things and thinking that this is actually deep exploration, but it is actually limiting me from looking at things that would be more helpful and more real?
Yeah. Yeah. I think it needs to be personalized a little bit more. Because there is some level of belief that like, no, like, of course I'm not like any other four. All of them are imposters.
Yeah, exactly. yeah, I'm the real thing. You know?
So, but yeah, there is like in some ways it's like be different than everyone else in that you are actually dealing with what's real and authentic instead of making up this world of drama that isn't based in reality. And I think that for me, finding that turn of being obsessed about what's real and what's the craziness of reality instead of what I've made up to be reality is what's kind of helped me become a little bit more grounded and less obsessed about the drama of it all.
Yeah.
I'll say one other thing. Just wanted to put in there, another thing to never say to a four is, can't things just be ordinary and mundane? And yes, of course they can, but it's like, but it's not. To me, like ordinary and mundane is just the things that we haven't spent time thinking about. Like, and...
But think about that for a moment, right? I mean, if everything has to be special.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't do it. Mm-hmm. And so you end up half-assing everything.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're not picking and choosing what I want to, you know, really make special.
Right. Right?
So, you know, so that's, you know, for me, the advice is always, you know what, man, you've got this great, great gift and ability. Use it wisely.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Don't spread it too thin and waste it.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying is like, it's, we can make anything into something interesting, special, and unique.
Yeah.
And to challenge us not to do that is like, watch me.
Yeah. And when I'm telling fours not to be like every other four, what I'm usually, I use it in the context of when they're just doing something that's actually kind of boring,
mm-hmm.
but
mm-hmm.
they think
it's interesting,
you know, that it's interesting or deep, or I'm the first person to ever think that I don't fit in.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, yeah.
You know, I was thinking about a client I had, who was in charge of providing certain kind of services to the rest of the company. I don't want to say exactly what, because it's people listen to it. Anyway, and he had internal clients. You know, he had to listen to what the people inside of the company needed, but he didn't do it. He was a four, of course. He's a four. And he kind of did what he thought was needed, not what the internal clients needed.
Wanted.
Or wanted,
yeah.
You know? And it was a problem because he thought that everybody else was wrong and that he had the solution for the company's problems. Well, and it didn't work like that, you know? So you can have these amazing quality or kind of ability to create great stuff, but it needs to be attuned to what people really need. And maybe it's something more practical, less special, but just useful, you know? So you need to be careful about that and not diminish what other people think needs to be done, especially when that's your job.
Yeah, I also caution fours to pay attention to their use of the word authentic, right? And this quest for authenticity. I mean, for me, that's almost a leading indicator of fours, is how often they use that word, right? And first of all, they can fall into the trap of not really defining what they mean by it. Right. And that makes it hard to capture. Okay. But when we talk about authenticity, we talk about it as an act of becoming, not an act of reverting. Right. There's this idea that to be authentic, I have to go back to my original, authentic, true self and act from that. And that's most of the time just an excuse not to grow. I'm not saying that this is exclusive to fours, right? I'm saying that, you know, usually people, when they say, oh, you know, I've got to be true to myself, they're just saying, I don't want to do the work of changing, you know. But there's this, you know, there's this fallacy of the garden, right? That somewhere back in time, there was this Garden of Eden where all was fine. And, you know, and me, you know, I have to find my Garden of Eden and, you know, get back to that. When in reality, authenticity is, what we think is a better version of authenticity, is better alignment with the reality of the world in conjunction with an expression of your own values and, you know, and gifts. Okay. So it's an act of blooming and blossoming rather than an act of reversion. Okay. You like that, Maria Jose? I see you grinning there. So you like me waxing poetic when we talk about fours here, you know?
Yeah, so it's flourishing, blooming, and all of those words that are so you.
Well, I'm touching into my inner four space here.
Yeah, I know.
And it is so, springtime here, and the dogwoods are all blooming
well,
in
it
my
isn't
neighborhood.
Here.
It's there quite
we
go. Beautiful.
It's starting to get cooler, so.
Yeah, yeah.
Before I forget, there's something else that I think that I worked with Fors, and it's this narrative they have with this filter where they think that everybody else has an easier time or get a better end of the of the thing, and they're luckier. I don't know. They just have it easier, and that I think it's just so unnecessary. And again, they need objectivity to kind of deal with that. But it's a story that doesn't help.
I agree with you. And I think there is something to just how we choose to go about life. And back to the whole, everything is personal. Everything is an expression of myself. We are slogging through a lot more by choice.
You're slogging through different things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And in some ways, enjoy the slog more. So we probably stay in it longer. And I do think, and you will push back on this. There is because of striving to feel unique. It is a question of who am I and why am I here.
Yeah.
It's story and identity, and those questions are inherently unanswerable, and so therefore it is a slog in an unanswerable, unclear way of being. So there
see, I disagree.
There. Okay, okay.
Maria Jose, you want to respond first?
No, I think that this is not exactly what I was talking about here. I mean, you can kind of wonder and think about those things as much as you want. But here I am saying it's a bias that makes me think as a four that things are more difficult for me. And not
sure,
that I
sure.
spend more time on things. Things are more difficult and other people have it easier. And that creates some frustration or resentment towards the world, towards other people, which is not helpful, and it's based on a faulty view of the world. Faulty, not objective.
Skewed.
So, look, the question of who am I, why am I here, how should I live, all these things, these are important questions to ask, okay? And the tendency to focus so much on those questions is often the source of great insight that fours can bring to the world. Okay, so I don't want to dismiss or denigrate the question. It's a question that everybody has to ask themselves and go through. And it's the hero's journey thing. Right? I mean, it's Joseph Campbell, classic mythology. Every hero story from, Odysseus on, I have to go out into the world in search of a sense of self, right? And I have to go on this journey to find it. And the concluding message is, oh, geez, it was here all along, right? But I can't realize that until I go through the journey. Right. And so the trap that the four can fall into is, thinking I need to keep extending the journey, in a sense. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. And not ever reaching or being willing to reach that point where they just say, okay. And the irony is that the more we stop striving to feel unique, the more unique we actually become. Because each one of us is inherently unique, right? Like a fingerprint, an iris print, our own collection of, experiences and characteristics and traits and qualities that nobody else is like. And the fours really start to flourish when they start to understand that. Right?
I didn't hear a disagreement necessarily. Do you want to try again?
Well, I just felt like being disagreeable. So,
okay.
I wasn't really listening to what you said.
Yeah, so, yeah. Yeah. Shocking. All right, cool. I guess I keep asking this on every type. So last question. How do you break bad news to fours?
I think it's same way as with all the other types. It's just people with your personality style tend to do these things. Yeah. And I would expect, this is what I expected from a 360 or from feedback about you. You're really good at this. And the other side of the coin is that you tend to do these other things, which I'm sure it's not what you want, but this is how it's perceived, or this is the impact it's having, and maybe we could work on it, you know?
Yeah. You know, in the last episode, Creek, when you and I talked about predictiveness in the Enneagram, you know, and my suggestion was that the Enneagram is not really predictive. There are stages of growth that people go through, right? And, you know, so in that sense, there's a predictive process and unfolding that happens in all of our development. And so to help people understand that what you're experiencing now is not surprising, you know, that you're here on this path of becoming who you are, right? Like, you know, Maria Jose saying, it's just, you know, yeah, this is what we would expect given the circumstances, right? And that's great. And here's what the next step is, or here's what the next step can be if you do XYZ, right? So, yeah, that's, and again, that's what we do with everybody.
Yeah, and probably that's not music to the fourth ears.
Yeah, right. Says,
well, you know.
Yeah, you're just like everybody else we've ever talked to. Yeah. You know?
Well, I guess, I think there is a some accuracy to the statement that fours are overly sensitive, right? And so delivering hard feedbacks, like going to hit different types differently. And I think, I guess, managing and making sure they're not walking out of there with just their head held low and feeling sorry for themselves.
Yeah. I don't know if I'm fully on board with they're overly sensitive. I think they're just sensitive to different things. And I think
everybody's sensitive
to different things, right? So
that's what I mean.
You know, we're all sensitive to realizing we're not who we think we are,
mm-hmm.
right? Or our sense of self being questioned or doubted or undermined. So we just have to, you know, communicate to people in a way that doesn't make them feel like that. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you don't want any type to, I mean, you don't want to crush anybody mm-hmm. and leave them on the floor. You need them with some energy and motivation to do the work, you know?
It can be fun, but you really shouldn't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All righty, folks. You made it through another one.
Yeah. Good stuff. Hey, get some cream or something, Creek, will you please?
Oh, yeah. So much cream.
Lather that up.
All righty. See you.
Take care. Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Awareness to Action Enneagram podcast. If you're interested in more information about Awareness to Action, their certification programs, or events, feel free to reach out to us through the links in the show notes or by emailing info@awarenesstoaction.com.